Welcome to the first arguments of the 2017 term. You will see a certain amount of baiting and switching up here, but we'll get it done. We're very glad to have with us to fill the vacancy our great old friend and colleague, Senior Judge Walter Cox. Thank you, Walter. It's always a real pleasure to have you with us. You all have been informed by this time, no doubt, of that the President has nominated Professor Greg Magg, Professor slash Colonel Greg Maggs of GW Law School, to fill the vacancy on the court. We, of course, await action on that. I'd like to welcome our new clerk, Mr. Perlack, sitting for the first time today in open court. Thank you very much. First case is United States versus Jacobson. This is a government appeal. The government is the appellant, and therefore the government will go first. Is the government ready? Is the appellee ready?
Yes, sir.
Government may proceed.
Members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Catherine Parnell, and along with my co-counsel, Captain Samuel Landes, I represent the United States. This court should overturn the decision of the Army Court of Criminal Appeals for two reasons. First, because 18 U.S.C. 3731 says that the certification of the government as to materiality of evidence is sufficient to establish jurisdiction in the appellate courts. And secondly, because there's no compelling reason to treat appeals in the military system from those in the federal system. In this court's precedent addressing Article 62, including United States versus Werdrich and United States versus Browers, this court has recognized that Congress intended to provide the government with a broad right of appeal and to fill a void that did not exist in the military system.
Well, there's no compelling reason. Where does that standard come from?
Your Honor, that standard comes from Lopez de Victoria and this court's case law that talks about why we might want to distinguish Article 62 in the military system.
Well, it seems to me that there's a substantial reason for distinguishing. You got two different statutes and they don't read the same. One, clearly, 3731 clearly indicates some sort of conclusivity. 62 doesn't. 62 seems to point to the court making an independent adjudication on that question.
Your Honor, first,
I mean, you know, it's clear that the regional courts of appeal construing 3731 have done that consistently, but this isn't the same statute.
And you're also talking about like this broad right, and in fact we've said that Article 62 strictly prescribes interlocutory government appeals to the exact language and the exact circumstances. And it's hard to understand how, when we decide all the time whether or not there was an exclusion of evidence, which is the first part, that we don't also get to decide the second part.
Yes, Your Honor. To address Your Honor's questions, 3731 and Article 62 are written.
Could you speak up, please?
Yes, Your Honor. 3731 and Article 62 are, in fact, written differently. However, like Article 66 and Article 67, neither of those statutes contain such a conclusive standard of jurisdiction as 3731 either, in terms of the case being forwarded to the appellate court for consideration. With respect to the differences between the statutes, the legislative intent makes it clear, and this court has recognized in its precedent, that the intention was to remove all non-constitutional bars to a government's appeal. And while the certification requirement is a necessary part of the establishment of jurisdiction, the certification requirement shows that the government has undertaken a conscientious analysis, and there doesn't appear to be any case law that suggests that the courts examine the second part of that certification either, that being the delay question.
Well, isn't there legislative history that indicates that? Quote, the determination as to whether the appeal meets the criteria of Article 62 will be subject to review by appellate authorities. That's out of the Senate report that reported 62. That's fairly explicit, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. However, in United States versus Ludwig, this court established the pool of evidence test, which is similar to what the appellate courts of appeal in the federal system do, which is determine whether the certification is timely, whether the evidentiary ruling is the proper type, and whether it has been forwarded to the appellate court under the proper authorities. And so that review with respect to the certification itself is the review that the court should undertake. In the United States Air Force Court of Appeals, they talk in United States versus Schultz about the position of the appellate court and the reason that Congress wanted to give the government this right of appeal and to place the trial counsel in the position to certify.
But the problem that you have is that there's also two other important differences between Article 62 and the federal statute, right? Which is the federal statute is in force and is applicable only before the trial has started. So it's only before the trial has started. Article 62, they can raise it any time. All right, so that's one important difference. The other important difference is that the certification there is done by a U.S. attorney or their designated person, right, that they delegate the power to, and that person is nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. It's not some lieutenant or captain trial counsel who, as unfortunately we have seen, is not always very savvy as to how the law actually works.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's why Congress...
So, I mean, you think that we should just be able to say it was an exclusion. They say it's an exclusion of evidence, therefore it is, and they say it's substantial, therefore it is.
Yes, Your Honor, because Congress went through that analysis and specifically considered who to make the government representative for purposes of Article 62, and in fact built into Article 62 a number of procedural and substantive checks on the power of the trial counsel. For instance, in the legislative history for Article 62, they talk about having the manual for court-martial and the service regulations determine how the appeals ought to be taken. And for instance, in RCM 908, there is a procedure whereby, in order for the appeal to be filed, the staff judge advocate has to sign off on the appeal, and through the service regulations, for instance, 2710 in the Army, that also has to go through the chief of the government appellate division. The entire inertia of the government is working against frivolous appeals, because by risking an appeal, the government risks its resources, it risks its attorneys, it risks the participation in some cases of the victim, and it risks its verdict, because the momentum of trial stops at the moment when the government chooses to file an Article 62. As to the timing difference...
Well, in theory, the reason that it stops is because the government is arguably saying, I can't continue the trial and win unless I take this appeal, so I don't see how it's hurting the government.
Your Honor, it hurts the government because they lose momentum. For instance, if the case stops when a panel has been sat, at that moment the panel loses the opportunity to hear the evidence. In the case at bar, the appeal may take almost a year from the time when the government pressed stop on the clock. And so at that point, the government's in a position where the panel may not remember all of the evidence, they may not remember where they were in the case, and they have a substantial risk that that case will be weakened over time. And so when the government makes this determination, when the trial counsel, with the assistance of the staff judge advocate and the chief of the government appellate division, makes this certification, for the same policy reason that they do in the federal system, that the government is in the best position to determine what evidence is necessary to make their case. The government...
But, counsel, why isn't Judge Ryan's point compelling? You're saying there's all these reasons why the government would not want to go forward. But Judge Ryan's point is, essentially, in terms of this appeal, you're saying we're going to lose if we don't get this overturned. So why don't all those arguments go out the window?
Your Honor, they don't necessarily go out the window. Those arguments are important, but they're arguments that Congress did, in fact, consider in constructing this statute. And that speaks precisely to the materiality of this evidence.
But if you want to talk about legislative history, why isn't Chief Judge Stuckey's point compelling, which is it specifically says it will be subject to appellate review? So if you want to talk about legislative history, which I personally don't want to, but if you want to, you know, that point is as compelling as any other. And the fact that this particular statutory mechanism, unlike the other federal statute, can be raised at any time. Not just pretrial motions that the judge has said, you know, zoo lords, this witness can't testify, or this the weapon can't come in or the confession is thrown out, and that's all you had, right? Here we're talking about something completely different. You know, your argument that the inability to arguably try and rehabilitate a witness's credibility after the government has basically put on its entire case.
Yes, Your Honor, but that's not necessarily true in every case where the government brings in Article 62. And with respect to
we usually don't get to that point, right? That's usually not what you're arguing about.
No, Your Honor, but in RCM 902, with respect to the timing question, Congress did, in fact, build in a mechanism to deal with the potential for delay and to accommodate the fact that these appeals can happen at any time. And that is, in Article 66 review, if there's a conviction, then there's an opportunity for the appellate court to take that time back away from the government for speedy trial purposes. And so Congress already made an allowance for the fact that these rulings can happen at any time.
Counsel, maybe I viewed this case too simplistic from my point of view, but the statute itself, it's pretty clear to me that it just says he has to certify that it's the evidence excluded is substantial proof of a fact material case. It doesn't have anything to do with whether he wins or loses, does it?
No, Your Honor, it does not.
The statute doesn't.
Correct, now, but it has to do with the substantial.
So it seems to me that whether or not he's right or wrong in his appeal, or she, whoever did it, is not the question. The question, if it comes up and it's a stupid appeal, they just reverse the trial judge and send it back. That's the end of the matter. But it doesn't seem to me it's jurisdictional. Now, on the other hand, if it's some kind of fictitious or something, there's other ways to discipline the trial counsel.
Correct, Your
Honor. It'd be an unethical appeal or for purposes of delay or some other thing.
Correct,
so how did this jurisdiction question get in this statute?
The jurisdiction question came into the statute and into this appeal because that's the grounds on which the Army Court of Criminal Appeals
I read their opinion. I just wondered how they came up with the idea that this was jurisdictional.
Your Honor, they believe that based on the statute, that certification does establish jurisdiction. Essentially, that the question of the trial counsel having to state that it's not taken for the purposes of the day, and that the evidence excluded is a substantial proof of the fact material in the proceeding is one of the grounds on which the appellate court is allowed to hear the appeal. That's how it came in. But your position is very similar to that taken by the other circuit courts of appeals who talk about that certification of materiality and why it's so important.
So is it your position then that if the CCA had said, we don't think that what the trial court did excluded evidence, that they could still decide whether what the military judge did was correct?
Yes, Your Honor, because that is the position that this court took, for instance, in Wooderick, that the pool of evidence test is the test by which we test these, by which we examine these appeals.
If, to carry the argument, the jurisdictional argument, to its logical conclusion, whenever the government appealed under Article 62 and lost, that court would have had no jurisdiction to have heard it.
does it then follow that if there's no jurisdiction, there's no review? The military judge's action, whatever it is unreviewable.
If there's no jurisdiction, then under 62, yes, Your Honor, I would believe that's true.
So it's unreviewable. So in a sense, what are we doing here?
Honor,
we're trying to decide whether it's reviewable.
Your Honor, the issue we're deciding here is that the Army Court of Criminal Appeals, looking at the government's statement of certification, said we're not going to review this because we do not believe that this is substantial evidence.
Right.
It's the right type.
That's what's before us.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, the question of whether it's substantial or material is not before us.
No, Your Honor. It's the question before.
The question before us is the 62 question.
Yes, the question of whether the government's statement of certification that the evidence is substantial proof of the fact material in the proceeding is sufficient to confer jurisdiction. What the Army Court of Criminal Appeals should have done in this case, because the government filed timely certification and also completed the certification by saying this evidence is substantial proof of the fact material in our proceeding, they should have taken a look at the merits of the military judge's ruling and then kicked it back. If they disagreed with the government...
Well, no, wait. Take a look at the merits. That sounds like review to me. I mean, I thought the government's position was that whatever the CCA could do was limited to did the government file timely? And is there some there? I don't know. What What is the government's position on this? What can the CCA do?
Your Honor, the government's position is that once the government has filed a timely appeal and once they've made the certification that the evidence is substantial proof of the fact material in the proceeding.
That's conclusive.
That confirms.
So the only thing the court can really look at is whether the government was late.
No, Your Honor. That the appellate court can look at, was the military judge correct? Is this the appropriate type of ruling that was considered under Article 62? That is, does it exclude evidence? Does it require the government to introduce classified information when it doesn't want to? That is precisely the evidence.
So you're saying that they can do everything except what they did. You're saying that they can do everything, they can consider everything about the government's appeal except whether the evidence was in fact substantial.
Yes, Your Honor, because the government
certainly... And that's because that's what the federal courts do, and that's what the NMCCA says, and that's what the Air Force CCA says.
In part, Your Honor, but also because this court's precedent says that when we look to 3731, it is guidance, not precedent for Article 62, but where Congress had initiated and expressed its intent to treat Article 62 appeals the same as 3731, then that should be compelling.
Well, with the language that was used, 3731 uses the jurisdiction shall lie language. And 3731 was written before Article 62. So Congress had a template of their own making in front of them, but in writing Article 62, they did not use the language shall lie. So what should we conclude from that?
Your Honor, this court should also look at 67 and 66. Article 62 is written differently because it is written to conform to the way that the military jurisdictional statutes already existed. It's not written to conform specifically to 3731, but Congress did consider that when they were writing that statute.
But the statute has two parts that have to be met. We've said that you have to meet the standards of Article 62 in order for us to decide in Article 6, for the CCA to do it or for us to do it. And one is that it excludes evidence, right? And we've had plenty of things where we've decided, did it exclude evidence or did it not exclude evidence? That is, and then it's substantial proof. So there's two things. And ordinarily, what you're up here arguing about is that whether it was an exclusion of evidence or wasn't an exclusion of evidence. In this particular case, they said they didn't focus on that. They focused on the other part of the statutory requirement. Those are the two things you have to have. You want to say, well, we only have to assert, because we certify it, that's enough. But it has to be both.
Your Honor, if we look to the statute and we try to give the statute every word in the statute.
I'm looking at the statute. And I'm looking at the differences between that statute and the other statute.
Yes, Your Honor. But if we give every word in that statute weight, including the certification, if the government certification of what is substantial proof of the fact and material in proceeding is to be reviewed, then essentially that statutory certification, it lacks meaning. The government certification is supposed to indicate that we took a conscientious pretrial analysis to decide whether to pursue this particular appeal. And once we've done that, because we're in the best...
Well, and you're also pursuing a conscientious analysis that it's exclusion of evidence, right? That excluded evidence, that what the military judge did excluded evidence, right? That's the other thing you're conscientiously looking at. And we've conscientiously relooked at that, as has the CCAs.
I don't quite get the premise that the government is in the best position to decide to make that distinction. Seems to me the judge is in the best position. Why is the government in the best position? Simply because we know we're a bunch of honest, straightforward people who don't take frivolous cases?
Chief Judge Stuckey, I see my time has expired. May I answer your question?
You may answer. Maybe it's a frivolous question.
No, the government's in the best position because on Article 62, the appellate court doesn't have any fact-finding ability.
Right.
And under Article 62 and RCM 908, the government doesn't have to provide the appellate court with the entire record of trial. In fact, they can just limit it to what they think is relevant for disposing of the appeal. Therefore, the government, in the personage of the trial counsel, with the help of the SJA and the government appellate division, is in the best position to assess whether that evidence is substantial and whether it relates to one of the government's theories at trial. And therefore, because the appellate court doesn't have that fact-finding capability, because they don't have the entire record, and because the government bears the burden of proof, that is why the government certification of materiality should be considered.
Thank you. Appellee may argue.
Thank you, Chief Judge Skookie, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Cody Cheek, and along with my co-counsel, Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Carrier, we represent the appellee in this case, Sergeant First Class Eric P. Jacobson. The trial counsel's certification of materiality does not conclusively establish jurisdiction under Article 62A1B for four reasons. First, the plain language of Article 62. Second, the numerous textual differences between Article 62 and 18 U.S.C. Section 3731. Third, the structural differences between courts-martial and federal civilian criminal cases. And fourth, to the extent this court reaches it, the legislative history of Article 62. I'll address each in turn. First and foremost, starting with the plain language of Article 62, the plain language provides for appellate review of whether the appeal meets the stated statutory criteria. More specifically, and as outlined by the Army Court, the plain language of Article 62A1 confers appellate jurisdiction for orders or rulings that actually meet the stated criteria. Essentially, the plain language of Article 62 is the government may appeal a ruling during trial, and the trial counsel must represent that the appeal meets the stated criteria. The plain language does not, however, convey on the prosecution any authority to compel a CCA to adopt its legal conclusions about whether threshold criteria are met. Instead, if a CCA finds an appeal does not meet the stated criteria under Article 62, it lacks jurisdiction.
But doesn't that put the cart before the horse?
In what way?
In the cart before the horse. You've got to decide whether the judge's ruling would substantially, whatever the language is, exclude the evidence. And then you say, well, what do you say? The judge was right, therefore we don't have jurisdiction.
Your Honor,
or the judge was wrong, therefore we reverse, we grant jurisdiction and reverse. Under that criteria, the government wins every single Article 62 appeal.
Your Honor, if I understand your question.
Well, I don't understand how you can say we don't have jurisdiction to hear this because we don't think it meets the criteria of being substantial material to your case or whatever the language is. If that's the criteria for jurisdiction, they could never reverse one because they would then always have to find, well, you're right, this does substantially prejudice your case. Seems to me.
Your Honor, the way we...
I just don't understand how they can decide whether it's substantially... What's the language exactly? I've got it here. A substantial proof of a fact material in the proceeding. You say they found it was not a substantial fact, right? Therefore, we have no jurisdiction.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. The next case, they exclude the confession, as Judge Ryan pointed out, and it's appealed. And the court below says, oh, that wasn't substantial proof to your case. We're not going to review the judge's ruling as to whether. I just don't understand. Seems to me Article 62 allows the trial counsel to take appeal to that court, and the court then decides the question, was the judge right or wrong?
Your Honor, our position, and I don't know if it will satisfactorily answer your question, but our position, Your Honor, is that the plain language of the statute has two separate determinations in regards to the stated statutory criteria. The first is the phrase excludes evidence, and obviously this court has analyzed that in a series of cases. And then the second phrase, which is absent from Section 3731, which is that is substantial proof of a fact material in the proceeding. So our position, Your Honor, is the plain language of the statute, as the Army Court found in its ruling, is that you have to meet both. It isn't just that it excludes evidence. It's that evidence must be substantial proof of a fact material in the proceeding. And that language is not found in Section 3731. It's one of the key textual differences between the statutes. But, Your Honor, I guess our position would be the government does have the ability, the plain language and the statutory construction allows the government to appeal under Article 62, but it ensures that the CCA determines in their capacity whether it meets the stated statutory criteria.
Well,
and then once it does, if it does, right?
Yes,
if it does, then they decide were they right, were they wrong?
Yes, Your Honor. We think there's a jurisdictional question, and then if there is jurisdiction, to address the...
Just as in Wooderich, the first thing that this court did was decide whether or not it was an exclusion of evidence, and then went on to decide whether it was correctly decided or not.
Yes, Your Honor. Plain and simple, our position is that it has to meet the stated statutory criteria as a threshold question or a threshold analysis before the CCA proceeds any further.
Go ahead. Finish your answer.
We think that's supported by, again, the plain language of the statute, and we think that you know, again, especially when read in conjunction with the differences with 3731, that is the construction and that is the framework set up for analyzing appeals under this statute.
Let me ask you the question I asked the government, which is, if there's no jurisdiction, then it's unreviewable. I mean, the military judge's decision, whatever the military judge's decision is unreviewable, right? Or unreviewable, at least under this statute.
Well, and Your Honor, I'd actually like to answer your question by pointing to a different statute, which is the plain language of Article 67A2, which says that this court shall review all cases sent to it by a judge advocate general. The plain language.
So in other words, they can get around it by certifying it.
Well, I think that is, you know, how and how this court does in this case and could in other cases have jurisdiction. But I guess getting back to Senior Judge Cox's question, the entire statutory framework of, you know, Article 62 and 66 and 67, when Congress wanted to use shall, and 3731 says shall lie, 67A2 says shall review, 6062 says shall be forward. When they wanted to say that the jurisdiction shall lie at a particular court, they did, in plain language. And again, our position is that if a CCA finds it does not meet the stated statutory criteria, there is no jurisdiction. We think that's supported by this court's interpretations in Browers, Vargas, Bradford, in cases in which they found it doesn't meet the criteria, there's no jurisdiction. And
what do you want us to do? If we affirm, what do you want us to do?
Your Honor, our understanding
is... Just throw it into the ether and let it fall into...
What procedurally would happen? If we affirm the CCA, the trial would continue, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. Without the evidence.
That's correct, yes,
right.
Your Honor.
Okay.
Moving forward to the textual similarities and differences between the statutes, we covered several in the brief, and I don't want to rehash all of them, but some of the important ones were the temporal restriction that is in 3731 that's not in 62, the difference between shall lie and shall be forwarded, the different personnel, but there is one additional point we wanted to raise before this court that we didn't put or that wasn't raised in our pleadings, and that's language from Wooderich that talks about, and I'm just going to read from the case. We've considered the differences between courts-martial and civilian trials, particularly the emphasis in military law on the prompt disposition of trials and appeals and the accelerated timeframes in Article 62. And there are three different clauses in Article 62 that either are not in Section 3731 or that are different from Section 3731 in matters of time or speed. And the first of those is the substantial difference in the timeline over the notice of appeal, 3 days versus 30. The second is the two, and second and third are language in 62 that's not in 3731, that it should be diligently prosecuted by appellate government counsel, and that an appeal shall have priority over all other proceedings. So in Wooderich, this court identified not only the variety of textual differences, but that one of those is the accelerated timeframes in Article 62. And as the Army Court said, considering the textual differences, you know, in their totality, the plain meaning of Article 62 is the excluded evidence must actually be substantial proof of material fact, not merely evidence that is certified as such. Our position is that such an analysis perfectly synthesizes the numerous textual differences between the two statutes. Moving forward briefly to the structural differences between courts-martial and federal civilian criminal proceedings, we again point to the language in Wooderich over how military law has an emphasis on prompt disposition of trials and appeals and accelerated timelines. And unlike federal civilian criminal proceedings, courts-martial must provide expeditious processes for expeditionary units. The military justice system ensures good order and discipline worldwide, and as Article 5 says, in its entirety, this chapter applies in all places. Also, and unlike a trial in state or federal civilian court, military judges move from state to state and country to country to try cases before panel members who also come and go, as do most, if not all, military trial participants. This can include counsel for an accused who belonged to TDS as a unit of assignment for a relatively short period of time. Our fourth and final point, to the extent this court reaches it, is the legislative history of Article 62. Our position is that the Senate report cited by the Army Court, cited in our brief, and cited during this oral argument, could not be any clearer. The determination as to whether an appeal meets the criteria of Article 62, as proposed, will be subject to review by appellate authorities. We don't think that language could be any clearer if this court even reaches the issue of legislative history. In sum, the plain language, legislative history, and textual and systemic differences between military and civilian criminal prosecutions all support the conclusion that certification by a trial counsel does not conclusively establish appellate jurisdiction under Article 62A1B. Pending any further questions from this honorable court, Sergeant First Class Jacobson respectfully requests this honorable court affirm the Army Court's ruling.
Thank you. I don't recall that the government asked to reserve time for rebuttal. Okay, go ahead. Please proceed.
Members of the court, 2 points on rebuttal.
And I have a question, but I'll let you give your 2 points.
Yes, Your Honor. The first point is that while defense counsel pointed out the many differences between the two statutes, they failed to mention the similarities between those statutes, that being that there are appeals from similar rulings, those that dismiss indictments or terminate proceedings, those that exclude evidence, etc., that they require the same certification, that is, that the appeal is taken not for purposes of delay and that the evidence is substantial proof of a fact material in the proceeding, and both of them do actually require that diligent prosecution. And when we turn to the second point would be this court's precedent in the United States versus True, where this court said that prudent advice concerning the use of Article 62 should not be confused with an unjustified narrowing of the scope of the statute or the deliberate frustration of the will of Congress when they enacted that statute. And in fact, that court was turning to United States versus Helsosky and Arizona versus Maypenny, two Supreme Court cases in which the Supreme Court found that under 18 U.S.C. 3731, Congress's intent was to remove all non-constitutional bars to government appeals. And considering the careful consideration that Congress gave to who should pursue the appeal, what the appeal should cover, and how it should proceed, this court should follow that intent as it has in other cases.
My question, counsel, is you, the CCA found that there was not substantial, that the evidence excluded was not substantial, and you're saying that they shouldn't be able to do that, right?
That they should not be able to do that. Correct.
So I guess my question to you is, Judge Cox wrote a concurring opinion in Browers and said this about Article 62. The government should use Article 62 sparingly, i.e., only when reasonable men do not differ, that the pretrial ruling suppresses or excludes evidence that is necessary to prove an essential element of the offense. Do you really think that the CCA was wrong to find that the evidence at issue here didn't meet that category?
Yes, Your Honor, we do. And the
seriously. Okay, thanks.
Where I quibble with this, I guess, is I have no problem with the CCA looking at it and say, this is the stupidest dang Article 62 I've ever seen. It's frivolous. It's not substantial. I don't even know why you're bothering me, but I don't think it's a question of jurisdiction. How would they decide if it was substantial or not if they didn't have jurisdiction?
Your Honor, one of the reasons
to me, it looks like the trial counsel confers the jurisdiction, and it's up to the court below to decide whether and win or lose.
Yes,
I'm a simple guy, though, sir.
What evidence is necessary for the government to where that evidence concerns concerns the credibility of a sexual assault victim, and when it's admissible for substantive purpose under the new MRE, it is most certainly substantial proof of a fact material in the proceeding, that is, whether she was in fact assaulted. Pending any further questions.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. Court is in recess until 10:20.